I'm Brandi Cruz. The following remarks were delivered to the Building Industry Association of Washington on November 17th, 2022.
It's really a pleasure to be here. As Joe said, my name is Brandi Cruz. I want to start by telling you a little bit about how I went from covering politics on TV to being here with you today to share my opinion on politics, something I wasn't in a position to do a year ago as a mainstream journalist. Something tells me that you might relate to the rationale behind my sudden decision to change course. I have been a Washingtonian now for 12 years. I came here to cover crime and justice for the CBS radio affiliate in Seattle after college. I was 22 years old. I'm Midwest from birth. I was born and raised in the heart of farm country in northern Minnesota. Went to college in Nebraska amidst all the cornfields. So when I came to Seattle, it was the most beautiful place I'd ever seen. I'd made a brief stop in New York City before I came out here, but Seattle, in my opinion at that time, put the Big Apple to shame. The view of Mount Rainier, the waterfront, the market, the clean streets and beautiful neighborhoods, each with their own unique charm. I had made a Friday morning practice of going to Kerry Park. If you're not familiar with it, it's the quintessential view of Seattle. In fact, it's the view Frasier had outside of his apartment window on the show. No apartment actually exists that has that view, but they just sort of made it up behind him. I would sit there on a park bench in the mornings, sipping coffee, thinking to myself, I'm never gonna leave this place. About 3 years into my job here in radio news, I made the switch to television. A local news director for the Fox affiliate in Seattle asked me if I wanted to come do investigative reporting for them. I said, sure, why not? They threw more makeup on my face, and voila, I was a TV news lady. It wasn't long after that that the entire nation became transfixed, obsessed even, with politics. And so while I had been covering crime and justice for much of my career up to that point, during the 2016 presidential campaign, I transitioned into covering politics full time. In 2019, it led us to launching a Sunday morning political program that Joe apparently DVR'd every Sunday called The Divide. The concept was built around something I cared about quite a bit and something I still care about today, restoring civility and searching for common ground. Every week we'd tackle controversial issues and we'd try like hell to get the two sides to agree on something. In fact, where's Jesse? Jesse appeared as a veteran on an episode, sitting across from someone. The two of them had different opinions on kneeling during the national anthem at football games. Wonderful to see your face today. I, like most Americans at the time, saw the deterioration of our national discourse, and I wanted to do my part to combat it. And in my own little part of the country, the divide was it for me. And this is actually how I ended up meeting Gary Ray and being here with all of you today. He's part of a group on Whidbey Island called Civility First. It's an effort to get people who disagree to stop vilifying each other. And I know it's a hard concept, but actually talk to each other like human beings. So if you live in that area and it's something that you might be interested in, please ask Gary about it today. But Gary, this is the part in the speech where I have to apologize to you, because I know how much you value civility. This speech is about to take a sharp turn in the other direction. Okay, so I hope afterwards you won't think any less of me. What I came to realize in my career in television, covering politics in particular, in one of the most difficult political environments in the country, is that there can be no civility without sanity. There is no room for common ground without common sense. Now, I want to be clear, similar to Rick's sentiments, this has nothing to do with political party. I've made it pretty clear that I don't frankly like either of the political parties very much. This has to do about something I believe is the real divide in our country and in our state and in our communities. And that is the divide between the reasonable and the unreasonable. My time as a political journalist in Seattle entered what I would call the twilight zone from about 2018 to 2021. I watched a few things happen. I watched the city council pass a head tax on big business without one shred of concern for the economic implications. A tax they passed because every week or two, a group of about two dozen of the loudest people you can think of shouted as loud as they could until someone gave in. Luckily, Amazon threatened to sue, and the city had no choice but to reverse course. I thought at that time, 2018, that it was the end of the insanity, the end of blind appeasement to the loudest voices in the room. But I was wrong, and it was really only the beginning. In 2020, I watched rioters loot downtown Seattle businesses to the studs while police cars burned in our streets. I hid behind a big potted plant outside the downtown Nordstrom's while my security guard disarmed two rioters of rifles they had stolen out of those cruisers before they were lit on fire. I watched them vandalize every window and every wall in the heart of our city. Not an ounce of care or compassion for the fact that many of those small businesses were already struggling because of the pandemic. And then I watched as our city leaders said nothing. And I watched as some of my colleagues in the news downplayed the violence. Violence I had watched with my own eyes. Because apparently I learned violence and destruction, if carried out in the pursuit of social justice, isn't violence and destruction at all. It's no wonder that a few days later, the city abandoned its East Precinct, handing six square blocks over to protesters who dubbed it an autonomous zone. Perhaps you heard about that. The night the precinct was abandoned, my crew was mobbed, forced to seek refuge in a fire station, and still city leaders said nothing. It went on for a month, with city leaders speaking out only after CHOP had become so dangerous that people were killed there, killed not by the police, but killed by each other. And what did the city council do in Seattle in the midst of all that chaos? Well, still eager to please the loudest voice in the room, they resurrected that failed tax on big business, this time pushing through a tax on high-paying jobs as the city was distracted, trying to put the pieces back together after weeks of unrest. And then they spent the next month trying to push forward one of the dumbest policies I had heard in my career, defunding the police. That summer was a masterclass in political cowardice. And the city that emerged from it was unrecognizable to me. I watched the city I love turn into a city that I could not stand to live in, that I was no longer proud of. I watched our once beautiful downtown give way to open-air drug markets and street bazaars full of items stolen from struggling businesses. Just about every storefront was boarded up, and not because of the pandemic, although we were gaslit into believing that was the case. As you know, you don't board up your storefront because you're closed. You board up your storefront because you're worried people are going to break in. It's common sense. And I also saw an already worrisome and tragic homeless crisis explode before our eyes. By that time, hundreds of millions of dollars in taxpayer money had been spent trying to get people off our streets with nothing to show for it, not a damn thing to show for it. At work, as you can imagine, I was walking a tightrope. I was disgusted by politicians and, frankly, by the press, an institution I had believed in for so long. Institutions that are supposed to have the best interests of the people they serve in mind. Yet there was little recognition, little acknowledgement of just how bad things had become. Around that time, pandemic-era mandates took center stage as lockdowns and restrictions dragged on. Now, I'm not a COVID denier. I was a good girl. I was careful around others. I got my first doses of the vaccine. I wore my mask into businesses without complaint. But as a journalist, I was stunned by just how little pressure there was on the governor to justify his actions every step of the way. I was stunned by the lack of creativity when it came to keeping businesses running and people working. I understood the need, as most of us did, to prioritize human life. I also understood well the true pain of economic ruin. And this next part will sound crude, so I apologize. But allow me to describe to you the moment that I realized we'd truly lost our minds and misplaced our priorities. In the middle of the pandemic, the King County Health Department launched a campaign that's only goal was to make sure strangers could still do it during the pandemic. And by do it, I mean have sex, okay? We're all adults. I'm not kidding about this. The campaign urged people to go buy a shower curtain and cut a glory hole in it. I bet that wasn't on your bingo card for Brandy's speech today. Are you still with me, Gary? Okay, good. I'm sorry there's no booze at lunch. The idea, hand to God, was to help provide a barrier so people could still hook up during the pandemic. And we laugh about it, but all I could think of is all that creativity to help people hook up and not an ounce of creativity for businesses, for livelihoods. And that's around the time that I realized I could not, in faith, do my job as a straightforward journalist anymore. I wanted to be honest with people about what was happening. I wanted to be more forceful about the failures of the government. So a year ago, to the week, I did a crazy thing and quit my very well-paying job at Fox 13 to launch the Undivided podcast, an independent podcast that I started in the spare bedroom of our house. I call it a podcast for people with common sense. And while we do try to have civil conversations on the show, we have zero tolerance for insanity from either party. We have zero tolerance for politicians whose policies hold back our cities and our state. And we have zero tolerance for politicians who fail to see the power of the private sector. That's what brings me to all of you. I have had the privilege this last week of going around the state and speaking to crowds in a variety of sectors, farmers, ranchers, business owners, developers. And my message has been consistent, that you are the key to solving our state's and our nation's most pressing crises, crises that our government has so far proven incapable of making progress on, despite spending billions of dollars in taxpayer money to do so. I spoke to the Washington State Farm Bureau yesterday in Wenatchee. The single biggest crisis facing the people who grow our food is the labor shortage. Yet we have tens of thousands of people a week coming to our southern border, and a government either so inept or so lost in its political bickering that they can't work together with farmers and ranchers to find a legal way to leverage that human capacity to help our country. And that's just one of many examples. I don't know how to explain the failure to look to the private sector for solutions. I don't know if it's pride. I don't know if it's disdain. I don't know if it's incompetence or some sort of combination of all three of those things, which is probably the most likely answer. And you know this as well. It is undeniable that we have a housing crisis in this state. Too many in our workforce cannot afford a place to live. And the dream of home ownership is increasingly out of reach for Washington families. Our state ranks last in the nation for number of housing units per household. We need more than 250,000 homes just to keep up with demand. If there were only a few thousand builders in our state who might be able to help with that. Do you guys know any? You know any who might be able to help? I look out at all of you. And what do you think I see? I see a solution. I see the people who build our communities, people who take pride in their work, people who want to help make their communities stronger, more diverse, more attainable, and more beautiful. And I see people who, if given the freedom they need to get to work, stand ready to do just that. But I would ask you what you think the government sees. What does the government see in all of you? They see an industry they can regulate, an industry they can take money from, an industry that, if left to its own devices, would put up crappy houses and charge a pretty penny for them. That's what the government thinks of you. Look no further than a governor's office that would make illegal appointments to the Building Code Council and then lie about those appointments in official documents. Look no further than a state that pushes through costly mandates on builders that raise the price of new homes by thousands of dollars. It's not rocket science. You cannot build affordable housing if housing isn't affordable to build. Now, I'm not saying that the government should lay down and just let the private sector steamroll it. That's not a good solution either. But I am saying that cooperation has always been the best path to success. Amazon is a key example of this. Do I think Amazon is a perfect company? No. But when you employ tens of thousands of people, there's bound to be a few issues. In Seattle, the second time the city pushed through its tax on big business, Amazon didn't even bother to fight. In fact, they didn't even put out a press release. They just slowly, behind the scenes, started moving jobs across the lake to Bellevue, realizing that Seattle would never see them as a partner, that Seattle would never see them as part of the solution. Now, lest you think that's reflective of a company that simply doesn't want to be a good corporate citizen or pay their fair share, look at what Amazon has done in Bellevue so far. Look at the partnership they've built, and you'll see what cooperation can get you. Amazon has invested in helping Bellevue to achieve its 20-year plan, helping with transportation projects and helping to beautify the city, creating public spaces for everyone to enjoy, not just their employees. And in its latest budget, when the city of Bellevue proposed a tax increase on businesses, Amazon didn't blink. They didn't argue. They didn't push back. Why? Because it was done in the light of day. It was done in cooperation. It was done for the right reasons. And the relationship that Amazon had built with Bellevue made the company confident that the money would be spent wisely. They did not have such confidence in the city of Seattle. That is the power of public-private partnerships. It is what leads to progress, smart progress, sustainable progress. Was my message today civil? Probably not. Sorry, Gary. I think you'll forgive me. But remember, there can be no civility without sanity. There is no room for common ground without common sense. So let me leave you with this. Continue to see yourselves as part of the solution, because you are. You know it. I know it. Any politician with a lick of common sense knows it. Continue to push back, as I know you will, against policies that make it harder for you to contribute to your communities. Policies that are not rooted in need or necessity. And above all, fight like hell to put people in positions of power who want to partner with you. Because those partnerships are truly the only way to keep this beautiful state of ours from going backward. Thank you, and thank you for having me.
If you like the message of that speech, be sure to listen to the Undivided podcast every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to support the show, you can become a subscriber for as little as $5 a month at patreon.com/undivided or by joining my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com.